The information and opinions provided in this program are intended for general information purposes only and are not designed as a substitute for obtaining personal professional advice. Individuals with health concerns should always consult their healthcare provider for professional medical advice. The opinions and views expressed by the speakers are theirs alone and are not necessarily shared by AM800-CKLW or its employees.
Helping you live a more purposeful life. You're listening to Real Talk with Maria DeRubis on AM 800.
Well, good morning, everyone, and happy Sunday to all of you listeners out there. Thanks for tuning in once again on a Sunday morning. You're listening to Real Talk, and I'm your host, Maria DeRubis. We're going to get right into our conversation today. We're talking about mental health and addictions. And what I want people to understand is that they are interconnected topics that usually will coexist and impact individuals on various levels. And it's so crucial that we approach these subjects with sensitivity and understanding. The lines are open this morning. We really want you to call, and you can reach us at 519-792-2559 or text us at 10-800. If you would like to share your thoughts or feelings about the topic today, or if the story that our guest is going to share today resonates with you or you have had a similar experience, please call in and share. We're here to support you as well. And I'm sure that many of us here in Windsor, Essex County, we're not surprised that it is in a state of crisis when it comes to mental health and addictions. Driving around the downtown area really, you know, is an eye opener. And I was down there yesterday driving around and was saying to my partner that the area has really changed and it's not what it used to be. I remember so much of downtown when I was growing up, and it's very sad to see it in the state that it's in. And I'm hoping that, you know, we have some politicians and the mayor listening this morning, and that, you know, if you care about our city, that you're going to, you know, hear what's happening and hopefully do something to make it better. Windsor-Essex region ranks the seventh among the highest rates of opiate users in the province. And that's pretty sad. Think about that. Seventh. And I can't, you know, repeat that enough. On September 22nd, 2023, the Windsor Star published an article on the opiate crisis in the Windsor-Essex area, whereby in the first week of September 2023 alone, there was an opiate overdose alert. There were over 385 opiate-related visits to hospital emergency departments last year in Windsor, Essex. And I'm sure that's, you know, not even the true account, because many do not get reported because of the continued stigma. I attended for the first time the Lights of Hope last September, I believe. And the Lights of Hope offers support for those struggling with addiction and loss, and the annual event is meant to honor people who lost their lives to overdoses and show support for grieving friends and family. I attended this event to honor the many people, the very many young people that I know personally who have died of overdose. And I heard my friend Cheryl share her experience of loss of her beautiful son, Mitchell. The words really resonated, and they were very moving to me and brought tears to my eyes. And so today, I have the pleasure of having Cheryl on the show. She is very brave and courageous to be here to share her journey. And so without further ado, we're going to welcome Cheryl to the show so that she can share her journey with us and also share her story about Mitchell, her beautiful son. So Cheryl, thank you so much for being here.
Maria, thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time for me to come down here and speak.
I know you're probably a little nervous, and I'm a little nervous too, so it's okay. This is real talk. So I want us just to have a conversation.
Yep.
Perhaps you can maybe share a little bit with our listeners, you know, who you are, who Mitchell was. I would love to know a little bit more about him.
So I'm Cheryl, and my son's name is Mitchell, and he was just shy of his 31st birthday before he died of an overdose. He was a very, very good child. Wouldn't even know that he had mental illness, which I think came on after all of the abuse of the drugs. Very sweet boy. I mean, I know I'm his mother, but he was, we tend to, pat ourselves on the back, but he was a very, very good young man and a very good baby. So we were all shocked as this journey continued and did get a lot worse.
Yes. And I think what you're saying is so important, Cheryl, is that these young people that are struggling with mental health and addictions are beautiful. They're beautiful children, and they could be your child. And I know that oftentimes I've heard parents say, well, it's not my kid. It could be your kid.
Absolutely.
And we've talked about this, Cheryl, where, drug addiction does not discriminate.
That's right. People tend to think it only happens in homes that are less fortunate.
Yes.
They don't make as much money, but that is not the case at all.
No, it isn't. And I can attest to that because of the more hand, I think I have more than, five or six young men that I know of that died of overdose. They all came from well-to-do families. They were all involved in, travel sports. They all attended high school, graduated.
Yep.
So it's not your typical vision of what people think.
Correct. Yes, it's not. It's a stigma, right? The stigma continues, and we're trying to erase that, aren't we?
Yes. Yeah. Would you like to share some positive memories, maybe something that really stands out for you about Mitchell?
I sure can. I touched a little bit about it, but he was a very sweet boy. He had the best manners, I have to say. And yes, I'm going to pat myself on the back for that, because I know
Good
that
mom.
We instilled that, and not just me, all my family did. So he got very excited. His friends were everything to Mitchell. So when he had time to spend with his friends and family, he was in a happy place for sure. He was a little bit, I want to say maybe half introverted.
Mm-hmm.
He liked to have his own space. But then, like I said, if it was family and friends, he was out there in a heartbeat. It was really nice to see him happy back then, because it totally took a change, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
When did you notice, Cheryl, that, Mitchell was starting to have some of these issues and started to struggle?
Well, I noticed when he was about 15, maybe 16. It's hard to say because it was so long ago, but I did notice. And one of the things I noticed, even though he was introverted, was that he was getting more introverted. So I noticed that, I think, a lot more than my other half, his father, which is okay, because I was home more, so I saw it. So he did spend a lot of time alone, and then I'd find little hints of things, like his personality changed a little bit. Like, you have to look at those things, right? Personality.
Yeah, and I think that would be difficult, right? Because at the age of 15 and 16, we also know that adolescents become a little bit more isolated and introverted.
Yes.
And they start to have, more of that attitude. So,
oh yeah, puberty.
So I don't know about you, but did you ever think it was drug related or just something that he's going through because he's a teenage boy?
Actually, both. I didn't actually think it was drug related in the sense of pills or, anything like that. But I thought maybe he was drinking. Because
okay.
I did find bottles in his room, but again, you're right. It's usually a typical teenage thing that they go through. Oh, I'm going to try my first, glass of alcohol or a sip of alcohol. That's when, I didn't think drugs at that point, but I can tell you that I did find after that, I would find a little bit of marijuana, I don't even know what you call it now, marijuana pieces around our apartment.
Oh, like the dry herbs.
I know.
The flowers.
I'm old school.
Weed.
1970s. But our listeners won't even know what that is. Yeah, weed. And so, and then there were things that were happening that, so my doctor prescribed myself anti-anxiety pills for sleeping for me because I was having issues with Mitchell. And maybe it was issues that every family goes through, but I was also divorced. Mm-hmm. So I was handling this a lot on my own, but Mitchell ended up stealing some of my anti-anxiety pills. So that led me on to the next level of what's going on.
Okay.
Awareness there, right?
Right. So that kind of was a red flag for you.
It sure was.
Shara, we'll be right back. We do need to take a break, and you are listening to Real Talk on AM 800 CKLW.
You're listening to Real Talk with Maria DeRubis on AM 800.
Well, welcome back to Real Talk. And we are here speaking with Cheryl, who is so courageous to share her journey regarding her son, Mitchell, who passed away from an overdose. And prior to break, we were talking about how you had noticed, Cheryl, that he had been maybe stealing some of your medication. How did you navigate some of the complexities of supporting him as you noticed these changes?
Well, I continue to talk to him in a way where I wasn't accusing him of things, but having that talk of, is there anything you want to talk about?
Right.
He was a very quiet boy, so it was really hard to get anything too much out of him. But I didn't force it. I just kept two eyes and five behind my head on him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And maybe I did a little bit of being a helicopter mom at that point, but I think I needed to.
I don't see how you wouldn't be able to do that, right? Just
right.
Noticing these changes in your child. And
yeah.
When did things start to really escalate? And, what else could you share us about that time?
Well, as I was saying, the complexities of supporting him during his addiction process, I always, always made sure that I told him I loved him,
mm-hmm.
whether it's on the phone or the five-minute visits that I did with my partner, and just support. I never ever said to him, you're an addict, you need to go get help. It was never like that, because as some people may not, that you can't fix them. And if they don't realize that they have an addiction, there's nothing that can be done. There's absolutely nothing. They have to figure that themselves. And I always said to him, when and if that does happen, I am here for you to help you through the guidance of what the next step shall be. And he would always, come up with, Mom, I don't have any problems.
Mm.
I could be an addiction counselor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that happens with a lot of the young people going through addiction, as they feel they're the ones that can preach it. They're not the ones that are sick.
Right.
Yeah.
And as a parent, I'm sure just feeling so helpless and hopeless as you know there's something going on, but you can't really put your finger on it.
Right.
And it's almost like your child becomes your addiction.
Oh, boy. That is exactly. That's a good word, Maria, because and that's where supporting versus enabling comes in. And that's a perfect entrance for that, because there's a fine line between supporting and enabling. And I needed help with that, like everybody would.
For sure.
And I was guided the proper way with seeing a counselor and going to classes. And I made sure that I had the ammunition and the info for myself to carry that on to help Mitchell. So yeah, that's true, Maria, absolutely.
Because you almost begin to obsess over, you know, where are they? What are they doing? What, you know, this seems weird. And I remember attending a group and I heard about the three C's.
Yes.
Really kind of just stayed with me. And I share that with many, many parents that I work with. And the three C's are, let's do it, Cheryl.
Okay. I forget.
Okay. You can't control it.
That's it. Control.
You can't cure it.
Right.
And you didn't cause it.
That's right. Thank you. I completely forgot about those three things.
Right. Yeah. No worries. And I apologize if I put you on
you
the
didn't.
Spot.
You know what? If I forget something, I'm totally going to own up to it.
And I may forget things too. But I think it's so important that parents understand that, you know, we can't control this.
Right.
As parents, we can't even fix it. We can't cure it. And so many parents blame themselves. And I don't know about you, Cheryl, but maybe you could share, like, did you kind of ruminate about, you know, where did things go wrong? Was there something I did? Maybe it was the divorce. Maybe it was this. Maybe it was that. And just that just drives you crazy.
That's a very good question, Maria. I fortunately didn't do a lot of blaming on myself, which, thank goodness, and I'm not saying I did everything right because I didn't. I just knew that I took every avenue to guide him in a positive way. So maybe I had little bits of guilt, and why did this happen to Mitchell and not someone else? But then I wouldn't want that to happen to someone else. So it would always come back to, you know what, this happened. I'm doing the best I can. Thank goodness I have a loving family and friends, and I'm just going to go with that.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and if I can say his name, Enzo, my boyfriend.
Oh, of course you can.
He's amazing.
And he's here supporting you.
He's hiding in the other room because I didn't want him in here with me. Yes. He's a good support system. So I have a lot of support.
And that's so important, right?
Yes.
That whether you're a parent or a family member of someone who has an addiction, that you get support.
Yes.
That you attend the groups that are out in our community and, you know, get yourself into, you know, some form of counseling program. How has this experience of going through this journey with Mitchell maybe changed your perspective on addictions and mental health?
Well, absolutely stigma. And we are going to say that till we're blue, because stigma is going to be here until it changes. And I don't know about everybody else, but I think it's slowly changing. But slow isn't good enough.
No,
right?
It's not.
We need this to happen quick, because we are losing a lot of people to addiction, and people are looking at them like it is their fault. You know, why can't they fix themselves or admit they have an issue? It's not that simple.
No.
Believe me, it's really not. And the stereotyping is just hard. And I know that a lot of people don't understand it, thank goodness. So we all had a little bit of stigma before this happened.
Right.
So, and one of the things that I'm here today, and like you, Maria, we want people to know that it's not the way people see the person going through it. They didn't wish this on them, and they're not saying, I wanna drive my mom and dad crazy and just have an addiction.
No, I don't believe that, Cheryl, because I've talked to young people and, you know, they regret the day they picked up that pill. They really do. Because it's not what they wanted. And maybe they started using because they were, you know, self-medicating for mental health reasons or just wanting to numb the pain of whatever was going on in their life. And then it became the problem.
Yes. And I have to say that wasn't Mitchell's case. It went the opposite. So he started with the addiction.
Mm-hmm.
And then slowly I noticed a difference he heard voices. He was talking to himself. We had to check our car glove compartment box because he thought there were people in there.
Mm.
And again, he was seeing things. He was hearing things, a lot of voices in his head. And did he want that? I don't think so.
No, I don't think he did. That must have been so devastating for you.
It was very, very devastating. But, you know, it's something you get used to. I don't want to say get used to in a good way, because it's not. But it's almost like you're immune to that.
Yeah. Yeah. Cheryl, we have a text that's come in. If you'd like, I could share it with you. This texter writes, "Thank you, Cheryl, for sharing Mitchell's life with us. I am truly sorry for your loss. No parent should have to go through this. Drug addiction hits close to home for me, as I myself have a family member struggling with addiction, and they have had a near-death experience due to fentanyl. We were lucky to bring him back to life. Thankfully, we had naloxone on hand, which all parents should have in their cabinet. You can get this free at your local pharmacy. Unfortunately, opioids are stronger than they are, and I agree that no matter what we say or how many tears we shed, they will never stop until they get therapy." And that brings tears to my eyes reading that.
That's a very, very, very good text. Thank you for sending that. It's good to share. And it's all of our stories are similar.
Yes, and we all have someone in our life that struggles with addictions. And, you know, I myself have had a family member as well. And it is very difficult to just see this happening and just feeling helpless.
Yes, it is. We're fixers.
Yes. And this is something we can't fix.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for that text.
You're welcome, Cheryl. We are going to go to break. And once again, you're listening to Real Talk with Maria on AM 800 CKLW.
The information and opinions provided in this program are intended for general information purposes only and are not designed as a substitute for obtaining personal professional advice. Individuals with health concerns should always consult their healthcare provider for professional medical advice. The opinions and views expressed by the speakers are theirs alone and are not necessarily shared by AM 800 CKLW or its employees.
You're listening to Real Talk with Maria DeRubis on AM 800.
You can call Maria now, 519-792-2559.
Welcome back to Real Talk, and thank you once again for tuning in today as we listen to Cheryl share her story of her son Mitchell. And we have so much to say today, Cheryl, that I'm finding we don't have enough time, so I'm going to have you come back. I'm hoping that you would...
I would definitely come back because I'm thinking of all the things that I'm going to be missing that's coming to my mind.
Yes. And so we do have some texts coming in, and I think they are important to share with you. So I'm going to do that right now. So the first one is, thank you so much, Cheryl, for sharing your story about Mitchell and allowing us to remember the sweet boy he was. When Mitchell visited my mom, her day was complete with his warm embrace. Mitchell was absolutely amazing, and I feel so grateful to have met him. And that was a text for you, Cheryl.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you so much for texting that. I appreciate it. That touches my heart. Thank you.
And the next one is, greetings, Maria. We, too, are going through problems with our adult son that continues to make poor decisions and behavior. We don't know what else to do to keep our sanity and guide his young children who do not live with him. It's so depressing. Thanks. Kindest regards. Cheryl, what would you like to maybe share with this texter about?
Can you say that one again, please? I want to make sure I have all.
They are going through some problems with their adult son who continues to make poor decisions, and it's affecting his behavior, and they don't know what else to do to keep their sanity.
So first of all, I would say, is this adult son living with you? If they are, there needs to be boundaries put in place, I would think.
Boundaries are important.
Yeah. And, you know, are they working? Are they? So you have to find out what is going on more with this. I'm not sure how old the adult son is. There's also... I mean, I can go into this where you can form them as well. And forming is a whole different thing, which I had to do with Mitchell, when you have someone who doesn't give you consent because they're over the age. And that is getting a form for them to have the justice of the police get the police officers to go get your son mm-hmm. and maybe have him brought to the mental health hospital and have him do a diagnosis. Maybe he has something else going on. But definitely I would say, for a short answer, is that's tough. You have to really put boundaries up and do not give them money. That's all I can say.
Yes, we hear that quite often. And it's difficult to respond to some of the texts because we don't have a lot of information. So I welcome if you're going to text, perhaps you want to call in so we can ask you some of the questions. They did respond and say he is working and he is not living at home. So again, setting some really clear boundaries. And perhaps reaching out for a counselor for themselves so that they can receive the support that they need.
That's perfect. Yes. Yes.
Cheryl, could you maybe speak a little bit about what were some of your coping mechanisms or supports that helped you through not only Mitchell's addiction, but also in his death in terms of the grieving process?
Well, I've always loved writing poetry. So that was one thing I got back into doing, and I have a book, so I have it printed off, and it really helps me because it tells my story.
Mm.
So instead of repeating it over and over in my head, I write it down and I make it into poetry, and I love it. I love doing that. If people aren't into writing poetry, you can journal. Journal
yes.
is great. There's no rules to journaling. You can write whatever you like. If you're mad, if you're angry at the world, if you just journal it, it does work. It really does.
And it's really about dumping out what's in your head because you're just ruminating about it. And so putting it on paper just is another way of getting rid of some of that.
Absolutely. It is, Maria. And I also, I started at the beginning when he just passed on writing letters to him. So you can write letters to your son, your daughter, whoever it may be that passed. And it doesn't, again, there's no rules on what to say. But it's just like you said, Maria, it's just getting out those feelings mm-hmm. and not having it resonate so much in your brain, right? Listening to music. I listen to music. If you want, get up and dance. Maybe there are moments you want to just dance.
And that's okay to feel happiness.
It is. It is okay. Allow yourself for that.
Mm-hmm.
And on the other hand, allow yourself to cry.
Mm-hmm.
So it goes both ways. You want to cry. You want to be happy. And emotions do come. It's a flow of different emotions every second of every minute of every day. I don't like to say I isolate. I cocoon.
Cocoon. Okay. Tell me the difference. What do you mean by cocooning?
I cocoon meaning it's temporary.
Ah,
so
okay.
Sometimes I'll even cocoon and put the blanket over my head in bed. And it's just my own little, I don't know, sanctuary of, I'm not trying to keep anyone out, but I feel like I'm my own person inside this blanket.
Mm.
And I know whatever I'm thinking is going to be thought about, and then I can put it to bed a little bit. And then I don't know if it's a word, uncocoon.
And we'll make it a word.
It's a new word. And so I don't want to say isolating, because isolating yourself is not a good thing, I believe. So I call it cocooning. So if you want to use that word, go ahead. I stole it from something. It's not my idea. A lot of deep breathing.
Yes.
Deep breathing does work. If you like yoga, it's perfect, especially before bed. And I think that this is one of the most important things for me was the toxic people in your life, you need to maybe put at arm's length for the mm-hmm. time being. You know, if you're having people around you that aren't supporting, don't understand, and you're trying to educate them, but they don't want to understand that, I think that to me is a toxic person, and you can't have them in your life. I mean, I can't because there's too much going on. I need peace, I need support, and I need understanding.
Yes, and sometimes I have a good friend who also lost her son, and I remember her sharing with me that sometimes people say the strangest or the most inappropriate things when it comes to grief, and really we have to take that with a grain of salt. And I think it's just that people don't know what to say. I know for the longest time I didn't know how to talk to her. I didn't know what to talk about, because for me it was like, well, how can I possibly share anything with her when there's nothing worse than losing your child?
Yeah, and that's perfectly normal for the other person, right? They're scared. One thing I have to say is always say the person who passed away, say their name.
Yes.
Don't say he, oh, how are you feeling better about him passing? How about, are you feeling better about Mitch? You know what I mean? Like, use the name. That there's a saying, and I was going to say it later, but a saying, if you say my child's, I don't even know what I wrote here. If you say my child's name, I may cry. If you don't, it will break my heart.
Wow.
And it's very true. And I heard that from someone, and they wanted me to say that. And that is absolutely true. Saying Mitchell's name makes me smile.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because you think about him every day.
Yes.
And so why not use his name?
Yep.
Right? And,
yes.
And remember him that way.
He's a person, right?
Yes.
You know, even though he's gone to heaven or wherever you may believe that your loved one's gone, mm-hmm. you still want to hear their name. It'll put a smile on their face. So please do that if you see, you know, you're talking to your friends or family.
Thank you, Cheryl. That's so important
you're
to
welcome.
Know. We do have another text, and it says, good morning. Wanted to share that the Reaching for the Stars Optimist Club marks August 31st, International Drug Overdose Awareness Day, by placing crosses in memoriam downtown at City Hall Square at All Saints Church in remembrance of those who've lost to addiction and for those fighting addiction. The crosses bear the name of our loved ones who've lost this battle or of those who are still suffering through in hopes they find recovery. And they're indicating that if anybody would like to have a cross placed in memory of someone they've lost, that they can email reachingforthestarsoptimist@gmail.com. Crosses are by donation, and if you cannot afford a donation, they are free. And this person also says, thank you for sharing your journey, your story about Mitchell.
Oh, thank you for saying that, and thank you for sending that in.
Okay, we do have to take a break again, Cheryl. We'll be back at Real Talk with Maria on AM 800 CKLW. Welcome back to Real Talk with Maria, and we are running out of time, and there's so much to say, Cheryl. We do have a caller on the line, Lori, and let's hear from Lori.
Hi, Lori.
Oh. Hi, Cheryl. It's your cousin, Lori.
Oh, my gosh. Thank you for calling.
I have watched Cheryl cope with Mitchell's death over the past year, and she's done it with such grace, and I'm so proud of her. And all the information she's giving today on your show has been eye-opening for me, and I think it should be very helpful to people. So that's all. I just wanted to call in and give my support.
Oh, thank you so much, Lori.
Lori, thank you so much for calling, and I appreciate that. I love you.
I love you, too.
Thanks, Lori.
I know that we're going to talk very briefly about where to get some help, and I'm going to ask Aaron how we can maybe post some of these phone numbers on our website so that if you are struggling with a family member or a loved one that has a drug addiction or mental health issues, there is help out there. Cheryl, perhaps you could talk a little bit about some of the groups that you might attend.
So if anyone's wondering where, first of all, they want to get some help, I would suggest calling the Canadian Mental Health Association. Mm-hmm. They will guide you to the proper avenues of, you know, what you need. They're excellent. I attend two bereavement groups, and they're both very, very good. One is called GRASP, GRASP. And it stands for Grief Recovery After Substance Passing. and they deal specifically with substance passing of your loved one. The other group I go to is called Julian's House, and they're wonderful as well. And they do the same thing, but just with anything that someone has passed from. It's not just substance; it could be anything. But it's your child.
Well, thank you for sharing that. I was
You're
aware
welcome.
Of Julian's House. I was not aware of GRASP, and that's a really good resource to keep in mind.
And call to get a hold of GRASP, what you want to do is call the Canadian Mental Health Association, and they will guide you in that aspect. And for Julian's House, go online.
Yes.
Google Julian's House, and there's a phone number. They're awesome. They're so nice, and they'll help you.
Great. And I do have some numbers. We have the Drug and Alcohol Helpline, which is 1-800-565-8603. We also have the Mental Health Helpline at 1-866-531-2600. And then the other is what we want to share is that you can pick up a naloxone kit at any drugstore. They are free, and I would suggest that if you have someone in your life that, you know, has a drug addiction, that you carry this. Keep one in your home. Keep one in your car. I think everyone should have one. You never know when you may need to use that.
I did carry a bunch of naloxones because I didn't just put one in my car. I had four.
Oh.
Why four? I don't know, and thank goodness I never had to use it, but... Yeah, they're excellent. Just read how to use it properly.
Yes, yes.
And if you're not sure, ask your pharmacist. Or I believe there's somewhere you can call to learn about naloxone. You can also go online.
Yes,
I think,
you can go
right?
online. And when you pick it up at the drugstore, the pharmacist will go through it very quickly
oh,
with
good.
You. It's
okay.
very easy to
yeah.
learn it.
Yes.
Cheryl, is there anything else that you would like to share? I know we have a poem we'd like to read?
No, I just wanted to just say I appreciate you having me. And we did not get through half the stuff. An hour goes by so quick.
It does. And like I said, we're going to have you come back. But is there anything specific that you would like to share
well,
at this time?
Yes. If you have experienced the loss of a parent, And I have experienced the loss of a parent, and it's devastating. All I can say is there is nothing that compares to losing your child.
Mm.
I'm not taking that away from anybody at all, but that's what I want to get across is I know a lot of people say, well, I lost a parent, I lost a grandparent. That's devastating. I am not taking that away from anyone, but to lose a child when they're not supposed to go before you is it's just not right. So I just want the listeners to know and understand that it changes your whole perspective in life.
Mm-hmm.
Life isn't as fulfilling anymore because you want that person with you. You know, you want to see them get married. You want to see them have children.
Mm-hmm.
And all of that is not going to happen, unfortunately. So everyone heals also at a different pace, so be patient
mm-hmm.
with the way you're going through the healing process, and don't let people tell you that you should be getting on.
Right.
It's never going to happen. You're never going to get on. You're just going to, I don't want to say it to...
Adapt, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a great word, Maria.
Yeah.
Thank you. You're going
to adapt to a different life yeah. without your child.
And your days will get easier... Adapting. I like that word. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Cheryl. We talked about that we're going to read this poem. It's very impactful. If you need to get a hold of me and you need some information, just go to my website, www.mariaderubis.com. And so this poem very, very much hit home for many of the people that I know. Hello, my name is Drugs. I destroy homes, tear families apart, take your children, and that's just the start. I'm more costly than diamonds, more costly than gold. The sorrow I bring is a sight to behold. And if you need me, remember, I'm easily found. I live all around you, in schools and in town. I live with the rich, I live with the poor, I live down the street and maybe next door. My power is awesome. Try me, you'll see, but if you do, you may never break free. Just try me once and I might let you go, but try me twice and I'll own your soul. When I possess you, you'll steal and you'll lie. You do what you have to just to get high. The crimes you'll commit for my narcotic charms will be worth the pleasure you'll feel in your arms. You'll lie to your mother, you'll steal from your dad. When you see their tears, you should feel sad. But you'll forget your morals and how you were raised. I'll be your conscience. I'll teach you my ways. I take kids from parents and parents from kids. I turn people from God and separate friends. I'll take everything from you, your looks and your pride. I'll be with you always right by your side. You'll give up everything, your family, your home, your friends, your money, and then you'll be alone. I'll take and take till you have nothing more to give. When I'm finished with you, you're lucky to live. If you try me, be warned, this is no game. If given the chance, I'll drive you insane. I'll ravish your body. I'll control your mind. I'll own you completely. Your soul will be mine. The nightmares I'll give you while lying in bed. The voices you'll hear from inside your head. The sweats, the shakes, the visions you'll see. I want you to know these are all gifts from me. But then it's too late, and you'll know in your heart that you are mine, and we shall not part. You'll regret that you tried me. They always do. But you came to me, not I to you. You knew this would happen. Many times you were told, but you challenged my power and chose to be bold. You could have just said no and just walked away. If you could live that day over, now what would you say? I'll be your master. You'll be my slave. I'll even go with you when you go to your grave. Now that you have met me, what will you do? Will you try me or not? It's all up to you. I can bring you more misery than words can tell. Come take my hand. I'll take you to hell. We're signing off now. Please have a good week, and I will see you all, or at least talk to you all next Sunday. You're listening to Real Talk with Maria on AM 800 CKLW.